Hello.
Greetings.
What does the chronometer say?
8:41.
8:41. Okay. You want to pause that? I have a mission. Okay, we're back on the air. And she wasn't there. Sorry?
That's a bummer.
Okay. Down to business.
Okay. All right, darling. I've got to work on Tia's tips.
Tia's tips on astral travel.
You know, let's go with something in this one. I don't want to put a couple of sections in, one from the other night that I'm working on right now, maybe tonight.
But there's also some that Mark emailed to you, or I emailed to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have that still?
I've got it. I haven't got it on the line yet.
Okay. You're probably going to have to rearrange the wording slightly.
I usually do.
Because, I mean, it's 90% me through Mark, but Mark was totally conscious whilst we were doing it, so there's probably spellings because I was dictating to him fast, and he would go, whoa, slow down, in English, please, in English,
Wayne
please.
Jane has recorded it.
Recorded that where?
I can't record it.
Yeah, is it easier for you, or do you have to do is transpose it from one place to another? You just take that and email it to
Adam?
Yeah. Correct the spelling and put it more in line. What's the word? Add in the grammatical phrase and everything. Probably turn some of it around, take out a line, put it somewhere else, because I'm pretty sure that Mark doing dictation isn't as fast as or as good as if I was typing it. But there again, English isn't one of my strong suits writing.
That's true. Well, I did get Kyrian cards online.
Oh, but you haven't got me.
You're on there.
But you haven't got, you've only got my bio.
Yeah, and that's all I got for them too.
Oh, but yet you've got Tall down.
Well, Tall and the Wall were the first ones on the tape.
Oh.
There's just you saying, okay, well, I'm going to put on the first speaker right now. And then there's you going, okay, here's the next speaker now. There's not a lot of that really fits in as a big subject matter there. And, I mean, you didn't really talk a whole lot that session. You know, we didn't really get into long conversations, I don't think.
Why, was there somebody else here talking as well?
No, we had Kiri.
No, I mean, down there.
Where
you are, as opposed to me being up here. Was there somebody else in the room?
No.
Oh, it's just you and us.
Me and you guys.
I thought Johnny might have been present.
This is the one we did upstairs in the room.
Oh, that one when Sandy was here.
No, this is the week after, I think.
Ah.
Because this is Project Heart. Remember the one where we were working on Project Harp and Tall came in?
Oh, yes.
I can't remember. You remember that probably better than I did. Did you spend much time talking on that one?
No, not that much. Because it was a very crammed session.
Yeah, because I spent a lot of time on the Wall on that. So I've only got through one section.
I think I'm on more towards the end.
Yeah, it probably wasn't stuff we could really work with. But anyway, if we can get something tonight, then we'll go ahead and I can add that on.
Oh, that's the session when Katrina, when Toll left, And Katrina was still around.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's not a lot of workable stuff on that one.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's put some workable stuff on tonight's session.
Okay. Then. Astral travel.
Okay.
Okay. Let us look closely at the various types of astral travel. There is dream travel, which is the most common of all types of astral travel. Most people at some time in their life experience astral travel in the dream form. There is the second type, involuntary astral travel. This occurs when somebody is not feeling at their peak and they wish to escape whatever ailment that they have. And sometimes whilst lying in certain environments, for example, a warm, sunny area that is comfortable, they will feel their body floating up above their physical body. And this is the second type of astral travel, as I said, involuntary astral travel. Okay, the third type of astral travel is would be better to call it more along the lines of remote viewing. This is where you almost leave your body, and yet you're still connected, and you stretch out over a long distance, or a short distance even. And you are able to view what you're looking at, but yet also hear the noises from the surrounding area of your physical body. You can also answer questions in this state. This state is quite easy, because all you do is achieve a meditational state where you are still conscious, but yet you are also disconnected from your physical body. Okay, the fourth type of astral travel is where you actually physically leave your body. You're aware of your body, you are aware of noises, but they are more remote and distant, like a noise coming from a great distance. This is one of the more harder types of astral travel to do because it involves consciously programming your destination on where you wish to go whilst still leaving your body and being aware of your body. This is the type of astral travel that novices use. As I said, it is one of the more difficult types, but it is quite easy to do, because it is a programmed thought process that you go through whilst meditating. Okay, the next type of astral travel, or astral travel type 5, is where you physically leave your body in the astral form. You are no longer conscious of your body. It no longer matters. This normally comes after a lot of practice and experience as an astral traveler. I myself use this method. This method involves shutting down all unnecessary functions of the body, which also includes hearing, taste, smell, and touch. You are no longer aware of your surroundings. You are free to astral travel to wherever you wish, as far as your stamina will take you. Finally, type 6 astral travel. This is where you travel, as I described in type 5, but you also manipulate not only the third dimension so you can travel, but the fourth dimension and other dimensions. This is one of the most hardest types of astral travel to do. Now, of these various categories, there are subtypes. Involuntary dream travel. That is also very common. Voluntary astral travel, no, involuntary status. What I mean by that is astral traveling and desiring to do so, but achieving it without desire. There are also other numerous subtypes of astral travel, as I have mentioned. These are just a few of the types of astral travel, as opposed to the subtypes of astral travel. Now, there is another subtype of astral travel, which is where you are no longer conscious of your body. Your body has been, as you might say, parked into a level of awareness where it is not aware of its physical surroundings. This, again, is a very hard type of astral travel that I'm about to describe. And this is where you leave your body, but you assume a physical form in the physical world, but in the astral form. Sometimes you are actually visible to other people, but more frequently you are not. Individuals that are trained astral travelers in this can also detect other astral travelers that are in this status. For example, the Dalai Lama, he can see those people that are astral traveling in that form, or most forms come to that. There is another Lama high up in the Himalayas that frequently has visitors from all over the world. Okay, now do you have questions, Russell?
Yeah. Let's go from the last part forward. And that is, first off, how do you train yourself to see other people astral projecting like the Dalai Lama and the other Lama?
That comes from actually achieving their level of awareness, that they are master astral travelers themselves, and therefore they know what to look for. They know the feeling of somebody.
Well, for example, what about Mark? Would he be able to do the same thing?
I think if he thought about it and practiced, I mean, he can sense me when I'm around.
But he can't see you or hear you.
I don't think he desires to. It's just the fact that I'm bouncing around. And 9 times out of 10, I want to see what he's doing. For example, he could be washing the dishes.
Okay, well, what I'm thinking is that this is a very useful skill that would come in handy in emergencies or something else. And would it be wise to, you know, to pursue this at all?
For what purpose?
Well, for example, if you needed to warn somebody about something, I mean, you and Mark wouldn't matter because you just talked to him. But like another astral traveler, the person would have to be as good as Mark, right?
Yes.
We'll find that. Okay. The next question I've got is what about the kind of astral travel which I believe goes into category 5, in which somebody is in an accident and they leave their body and have no sense of it?
That comes under involuntary astral travel. This is one of the subtypes.
But they wish to be gone from their body.
Yes, it is a trauma-induced astral travel.
Okay, and then what about when somebody's working with fasting or something?
Again, that is a trauma-induced astral travel because your body no longer has the necessary sugar levels or iron levels or any of the particular levels that it is used to. It is induced into an astral travel state.
Okay, I see where that would be more harmful then.
That's correct. It is a trauma-induced astral travel.
Right.
Trauma to me is a big, wide field. I bite Mark's finger. Guess what I've just done?
What?
I've induced trauma to it.
Oh, I see.
I stand up. I throw Mark's body down on the ground. I break a leg. I've induced trauma. Or I accidentally step on a piece of metal and it penetrates the skin and there's a little pinprick of hot of blood that comes out. I've induced trauma. It's a big, wide area for me. I know trauma is most frequently associated with some kind of massive accident.
Right. Okay. When a person wishes to appear somewhere else in the physical form, this is known as de-jumping, correct?
Kind of. De-tramping is where you actually strip down your whole entire physical third dimensional being, bones, blood, all the way down to the molecular level. And then you translate it to somebody somewhere else.
Okay.
It's a you translate it and rotate it to a different point of origin or goal.
Okay.
Like a teleport. You're going to put down when I talk about trauma, the fact that I actually bite Mark's finger and pull off a piece of skin.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll put it in parentheses.
Yeah. But getting back to de-jumping. De-jumping, as I said, is like teleporting. That you take down your physical form, break it down to a molecular level, and then relocate it elsewhere.
Now, a lot of people find that, you know, there's something inherently scary about astral travel in the fact that you have the possibility of, you know, leaving your body behind. I've heard this before,
mm-hmm.
where they're worried they might not be able to come back, or they can get sick from it, or they could be possessed. How do you answer these questions?
I answer them by saying they are all possible. However, the chances of your body being possessed depends on where and how far advanced you are in astral travel. Most possessions occur with a experienced astral traveler, but yet has become lax, has got himself involved or herself involved in things that are best not to be involved in. Therefore, their body becomes a gateway. Getting lost from one's body, yes, that can happen. And that normally happens to novice astral travelers, but it is not a permanent condition. They may lose their body and can't figure out how to get back. And by wandering around, they will find their body. Or they will find somebody that guides them back. As somebody that may possess, there are also people that protect and will guide astral forms back to their point of origin. What was the last question?
Sicken and die.
Again, it is possible to pick up sicknesses, but this is because the astral traveler does not take care of their body in advance. And this is easily remedied by getting enough sleep, eating the correct diets, and taking precautions before and after. Some of the precautions that are useful to take before for a novice astral traveler is maybe a shower. A warm shower so that your body is perfectly clean. And again, when you return, you would wash your body to wash all the negative energy that you might have picked up away. Also, being totally relaxed and totally energized. If you have a low level of energy, you're certainly going to lower your immune levels. And astral traveling does drain the physical body as well as the astral body of energy. If you reach a point where you are very low on energy and you're astral traveling, it lowers your immune system in your physical body. And again, you can pick up ailments. But this can be cured, as I said, quite easily by getting the correct amount of sleep, showering, eating correctly, and behaving in a way that induces a relaxed status and yet helps to energize the body.
Oh, okay. Now, is there anything that you should do concerning the use of shields in your practice of astral travel?
Not really to start off with. Once you get into the higher levels of astral travel, then shielding does play a part in your astral form. Let me explain the levels of astral travel. There is, obviously, novice, very little experience on astral travel. Adept, which has some experience and tends to astral travel in the localized area of up to about 300 miles. adept, somebody that is quite experienced in astral travel and can travel maybe 1,000, 2,000 mile radius in astral travel. Master, this is somebody that can astral travel and go explanatory, but not very far, maybe as far as your moon. Also, they have lots of stamina and are quite experienced at astral traveling. Normally, this comes after about 5 years. Grandmaster. These are the badasses of the astral travel world. And I mean that in a positive way. They are like, how would you describe it? They're good. They can go explanatory. Distance then starts to become irrelevant to 3 light years. That's like getting up and walking across a room for them. 10, 20 light years, that's like walking down to the end of the street. 50, 100 light years, now we're getting into the serious range of them. They do that on a regular basis, or can do it on a regular basis. They can also, some of them, who are border point to the next level, actually transpose to different dimensions. Okay, the last level. Paramount Grandmasters. These are the elite, the best. And I estimate there's probably no more than maybe 50 on your whole entire planet, if that many. And I've just been corrected. It is more like a dozen on your planet. And these are the real heavy dudes. Very serious. Distance, totally irrelevant. Walk across a galaxy, no problem. Walk to the next galaxy, no problem. To the next galaxy. Now you're starting to stretch it a little bit, but they can do it. They can dimension jump to different dimensions. Fourth, fifth, sixth dimension. It's a bit of workout for them, but it doesn't present too much of a problem. These are the individuals that have a 50 to 60% chance of ascending to the next level in evolution. These are the individuals that can be a little bit on the strange side. They can be very cranky. They can be very arrogant. They can be very nice, very mellow, very relaxed, very helpful, very protective. All at the same time, almost. And this is because they are developing to a higher level. She wants to know where her cubs are. These paramount grandmasters are the individuals that, as I said, can be very protective. Not only of themselves, but of their knowledge and the people around them. They are capable of all levels of astral travel, from remote viewing to dimension jumping to traveling great distances. They also have a lot of curiosity.
Are there any that we would know from public life, like, for example, Dalai Lama?
Yes.
He would be one.
He is a border point paramount grandmaster, or he could be a grandmaster.
Okay, but we don't know any paramount grandmasters in the public life.
No.
And they stay to themselves. How would you, I mean, what kind of life would they be living? Austere and away from everybody?
Eccentric.
Oh, eccentric.
Mm-hmm. You see, Mark is almost a paramount grandmaster.
Hmm.
Almost.
Yeah, his business is going to need some work.
Mm-hmm. But also the other part of a paramount grandmaster is the speed of thought. They can travel to anywhere, anytime, any place just by thinking about it. Closing their eyes, sit down, relax, think of where they want to go. Bang! They're there.
And what about their body here?
Their body here works fine on its own.
Okay. Now, another question I have is, for a grandmaster or paramount grandmaster or even a master, what about when they're doing long distance trips or any trip of any duration whatsoever? Does their body is it able to rejuvenate while they are out of it?
No.
So they live a shorter lifetime then?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Some of them inherently have a long life expectancy.
Yes, but if their body's not rejuvenating itself, and let's say they're not taking really good care of it.
Normally, if they're not taking real good care of themselves, they do burn incredibly bright.
Okay. So just for a warning for people, keep their health a priority.
Yeah. Or at least to keep active enough to keep their body ticking along nicely.
Okay, well, that should do it for now, then.
Okay. Prem.
Bye-bye.
Prem. No, you better put parentheses in on that, but prow means goodbye.
I don't even know how to spell it, darling.
Fra-ow.
Yeah.
But spoke that quickly.
F-R-O-W.
F-E-R? F-O-A-W-E-R?
Yeah. Frower. Okay, well.
Well, you work it out.
I'll look it up.
Greetings and felicitations, Russ.
Greetings.
And how are you functioning?
Oh, quite well. Working hard. And I'm afraid that Dronovan loses a bit in the spelling translation when you get down to it.
Yes, I imagine it would.
In fact, many of the languages, I'm sure, from like Syrian all the way to Dronovan, is a little tough to translate into our English spelling alphabet, since I'm sure they don't include the same letters.
I am quite sure that they do not also. Okay, let us proceed.
Alrighty.
Notes from the commander's desk.
Currently, I just sent off all the stuff we did on Tesla and the Tunguska explosion. Mm-hmm. And that's just the first section.
Okay.
Because that took up 4 pages alone. I haven't even gotten yet to Project Harp and the Montauk and all that stuff that mm-hmm. came out after that.
Okay.
This is a chore. But what I'll do is I'll have 2 different sections and dated for the same day.
Okay.
I put at the end of the Tunguska that this ends this section. For more conversations after this, look for subjects that are dated the same day.
Okay.
So.
Also, as was stated in the past, you might want to get somebody to type it up for you that is a quicker typist.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. But then we come to the problem of who.
Who? Yes, who?
That might be a little bit tricky. That'd cost some money, I think. Well, we'll work on that. Okay. At present, I am currently working on some past UFO discoveries
mm-hmm.
leading to present-day technological advances.
Okay.
And what I'm looking at is something called the YB-49.
Mm-hmm.
Developed by a gentleman named Northrop
mm-hmm.
back, and it lasted from 1948 to 1952.
Would that be the flying wing?
That would be the first prototype of
mm-hmm.
the flying wing. And it is closely linked date-wise, hey, Johnny, Omaldi,
yeah.
and geography-wise to the recovery of the Roswell saucer.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the Roswell saucer was recovered in 48.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden you see this flying wing being attempted to be created.
Actually, the flying wing does go back a little bit earlier.
Hmm.
It was a design that was designed towards the end of your second great planetary war. There is a very easy way to find out more about this. Mark has an assignment.
Mm-hmm.
Watch weekday wings for Northrop's flying wing.
Oh, okay. I'll get some more information.
More than you wish for.
Sure. Well, the original, the YB-49, turned out to be the B-47.
Mm-hmm.
The YB-49 was just a few prototypes that never really worked, as where the B-47 Flying Wing turned out 2,000 of them. That generally, in turn, because that was a radical departure from typical aircraft design at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to the B-2. And the B-2 became successful compared to the original Flying Wings due to the fact that all of a sudden the computer technology advanced to a level where it could be mounted into a plane.
Correct. And also the engine capacity. The original Flying Wing was designed for...
propellers.
Correct. Piston engines.
Right.
They added in, big mistake, they added in turbo engines.
No.
When you mix turbos from a design that is for piston, you do not take into the fact that it is a different type of engine that has a different type of effect on the fuselage and the wing surface and the necessary lift generating factors. They then added in also jet engines, so that you had a mishmash of technologies, a fuselage and body that was designed for piston with turbines and also jet engines. Does not work. If they had designed it originally for jet engines that were powerful enough, then they would not have had the problems that they had. They would have had a functional aircraft.
So essentially it was a design problem with the fact that the propellers turning causes the plane to want to twist.
No, not quite. Let me re-explain what I said. The technology for the original Flying Wing was designed for piston engines. When they put turbines on, it changes the flight characteristics of the wing. When you add jets into the equation that have a different turbulence factor, you again change the equation. So you take a design of an aircraft that is designed for one type of engine and you mount in a totally different type of engine. So therefore, the effect is very different.
Let's see. A computer game that came out a few years back called Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe,
mm-hmm,
showed a jet-powered flying wing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this something that's actually on the design table of the Luftwaffe?
Correct.
And what happened as far as that? War came to an end too soon?
Correct. Also, if you look at this latest reusable shuttle, and also look at the secret weapons of the Luftwaffe,
mm-hmm,
you will find it there. Slightly different, but you will find it there. If you look at the European Space Agency's current reusable design that they're working on, guess what?
So this is basically close to a 50-year-old design.
Try closer to 60.
Okay. 60-year-old design being brought into a fact where now, with all our technology and advancements, we're able to finally make it a reality.
Despite all the corruption and twistedness of the uses of the technology, the Third Reich was quite advanced. They ranged from 10 to 50 years ahead of their time.
Hmm.
Or is it... little question here. Is it the fact that everybody was 50 years behind them? Were they ahead or everybody else behind? It is not the same.
Does this mean possibly then they were visionaries?
I never said that.
No, I know. We just were keeping ourselves from advancing at a pace that we should have been, and they just went ahead and advanced at a pace much faster.
It is a matter of semantics.
Right.
I'm leaving it open for debate.
Oh, I see. Ashtar's in the base right now, isn't he?
Correct.
Has he heard about our current...
Yes, he has.
And how does he feel about it?
I have not discussed it with him yet.
Okay.
He has been on and off the base for the past week.
Oh, okay. Well, at some point in the future, I would like to hopefully get him as a guest speaker we could add in.
I will see if I can arrange it, but I must point out that Ashtar is a busy individual.
Understandable. If nothing else, I can always take it from the archives.
Correct.
I've got plenty of stuff we've already had.
Yes.
Okay. Now then, a few UFO projects that I've been studying, which takes it back to where we started from, is Project Bluebird.
Aha, yes. I did receive a report from one of my data analysts.
Project Bluebird originally was designed to be able to not just reverse engineer any captured extraterrestrial design, but to actually go ahead and fly those designs.
Okay, I received an interesting report on my desk from an individual that went and saw a movie called AD4.
Well, I haven't seen it.
Her report is that there are numerous scenes and references to an area which supposedly does not exist called Area 51, where they go in and they come across a vessel that was found in 1948. They refurbish it and they use it to defeat the invaders.
Ah. Okay, so this ties very closely in with my question at that point.
Correct.
Okay, why all of a sudden would a movie come out with this particular scenario built in? It seems very timely.
Mm-hmm. Might I make a suggestion?
Sure.
It would be useful for both of you to go and see it.
I agree. How about we work on it for tomorrow? I can get us in. I'm going to have to pay for us to get in.
What is wrong with the 9 o'clock?
Sold out. They're all sold out. Every day it's been showing. It's been sold out.
What about viewing it from the projection room?
You don't get the same effect.
Hmm.
Possibly I might be able to get a private showing arranged. But that might take a little bit of work. One of the things about this is that, okay, we have a movie in which aliens invade Earth.
Mm-hmm.
We find Project Bluebird in fictional reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably one of the most popular movies to come out in a decade.
But sadly, it predicts, portrays aliens in a negative light. Not all aliens are like that.
Agreed. Well, that's why we're starting this webpage, so that we can make sure that, you know, at least truth is known.
Yes. You may want to highlight the fact that I said that not all aliens are like that. Certainly, there are aliens out there. But there are also aliens out there that die protecting you.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Which takes me to my next question. South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the date down here. 1989,
mm-hmm.
if I remember correctly. In which a ship coming into South Africa
is tracked and
supposedly shot down by experimental laser cannon from a Mirage jet fighter. And what we've been able to determine through the help of Tia is that there was actually a ship shot down by a unseen vessel above it. And that the use of the laser cannon is possibly disinformation.
No, it is what they believe actually happened. They believe it worked.
You mean they had a laser cannon?
It was a very weak laser cannon.
Oh.
By standards, but very powerful by other standards. It fires a pulse of light energy at a designated target.
That's pretty far advanced than compared to what I've heard of before. The most we've heard is that they're using lasers for targeting systems, but not for anything destructive.
You are not listening hard enough.
Obviously not.
They have lasers that are quite capable of cutting through an inch of solid steel.
But, I mean, still, we're talking about from a flying object at a long distance to make an accurate shot and actually bring something down.
That is why they believe that it worked. The fact is that they probably missed the target.
Well, they saw, all they saw, according to the report I saw,
was a flash of light come from it.
Flash of light coming from it. And suddenly it started to waver. In fact, it was a series of flashes of lights. And it started to waver. And then went down at 3,000 feet per minute.
That is not particularly fast.
No. And then impacted into the desert. Now, from that point, they brought the ship to a secret Air Force base.
Yes, near Kimberley.
Uh-huh. And the door started to open on the craft, and then they used heavy lifting machinery to pry it open the rest of the way. Two aliens then got out, quite hostile, and they were promptly arrested, according to this report. And then ship, crew, and everything got shipped off to Wright-Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last we hear of it. But apparently the aliens were alive.
Mm-hmm.
Typical gray beings with the small statures, three clawed feet and hands.
And the attitude.
Three-fingered or three-toed.
And the attitude.
And the attitude of they hate everyone. Some doctor pretty bad.
Well, how would you feel in that situation?
Well, I'd be pretty pissed.
So do not mistake them being upset for being hostile.
Well, that's just the report said.
Correct.
Now, what would aliens from another world, taken prisoner, have as a future to look forward to?
It is best not to discuss it, even for any race, no matter how hostile. It is not a very good prospect.
I agree.
The only thing that they can wish for is either a quick, painless death or rescue. The others do not leave much in the way of hope.
Well, since they can't be beamed out, I don't see much in the way of hope for rescue. But would you hypothesize then that the ship shooting them down?
I do not hypothesize. I only go on fact.
Okay. Do you think the facts support that the ship shooting them down knew that they would be surviving the crash and aimed for a particular point on the craft that they would?
Anything that I say would be conjecture. I cannot answer that question.
All right. Fair enough. John, you guys think I'm picking up all the questions tonight?
Well, yeah, I just kind of popped in. Just as far as, especially on the webpage, as far as terminology, instead of using the word alien, especially when we're referring to...
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Terrestrial, a lot more correct?
You are quite correct in what you are saying. It is a common terminology that is used by lots of individuals all over your planet. It is something that we grin and bear. How much we dislike it is irrelevant. It is what is easiest for them to understand, sadly to say.
Easiest to spell, too.
But is it accurate to say that the term alien alienates your people to a certain degree?
It is more something that upsets Kiri more than it upsets me. I have been called many, many derogatory terms in my existence. So they are words.
Question. Would it be better to say reserve extraterrestrials to folks like yourself who are kind of benevolent and alien to those folks like those grays who are not?
Why discriminate against one group for another group?
Well, it would differentiate.
hostile alien, non-hostile alien. Non-hostile extraterrestrial, hostile extraterrestrial. It is all the same.
Okay. Just a thought.
It is what is easiest for the populace to understand.
Okay.
I know this stems from a discussion on Native Americans and Indians.
Yeah, you took my thoughts right out of my brain.
Johnny protector of everyone.
Well. It more comes from the term political correctness.
Okay, the last part I have on this is that in the same, well, further on in the report I saw, was that later that same year, three crafts were captured in the Nevada desert, supposedly by some high-powered radar that was being used that knocked out their control abilities.
I think that is an erroneous report.
It would seem like it. I can't see as any radar would be powerful enough to knock out some craft of any kind.
Not unless you get real, real, real close. You wish to know how close?
On top of the thing?
Come here.
You're talking really, really close.
Correct. In other words, they would have to park on top of it. And then no matter what would be knocked out, even one of our aircraft, if it is high-powered.
Okay.
A radar that is used for bouncing radar images off of the moon's surfaces.
Alright. So radar imaging display almost.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that was my whole list right there and stuff.
Well, I just kind of came in late. Yeah, that was the main thing that was on my mind.